This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And wait for my thumbs up. And my thumbs up are here. So that means we're live here on both Pet Life Radio's Ask the Vet, Dr. Jeff, and of course here on Instagram Live. Here for you, here for your pets. Time to talk. Anything you want to talk about, now is the time. So I have a Stephen Robin request. Make sure that is real. If you want to send me a thumbs up or something, and we can have you come in. Otherwise, a lot of times for some people, they hit that accidentally. And when I go to invite them in, they're not there. So just to save the trouble. So anyway, hope any of you here in Los Angeles area are doing okay. What a disaster. I got to tell you, I have some very, very good friends. My sister, actually, who may be joining us. She, Robin, hi there. Okay. So, and fortunately, they have a place out of town, so they were able to go. But, you know, it's horrendous. I have one of my other really good high school friends, also a best friend of my brother-in-law, lost their house. A couple of my other friends, one MD medical doctor, one another veterinarian, lost their homes. It's crazy. And we have a number of my friends that are having to relocate, move temporarily. It is so frightening. What's sad is that, you know, how these winds really was the big problem that made the difference between, you know, a few homes versus hundreds of homes, because very, very crazy winds. And they're worried that they're going to start firing up again, pardon the pun, the winds. And that's going to unfortunately cause some more damage. It's been devastating. I feel so sorry for those that lost their homes, even those that are evacuating. And the hotels are full. There's really no place to go. A lot of friends are opening up homes for people. You know, it really is. It's really tough. So anyway, those of you, I hope all is well. What, you know, and also for me, one of the most devastating things to see is the and you see it all over the internet, the animals. Oh my God, these displaced animals. Oh my, it's mountain lions, deer, you know, possums, raccoons. I mean, families of raccoons, bear are all like, are being displaced, and horses. And I mean, it's really, that to me is so sad to see, because they're helpless. They really are. And it's so hard to help them. And the fire teams are overworked, and water is a problem because we don't have enough of it. It's really become very, very challenging, very, very sad. And I know that for those of you out there that have been directly affected, our hearts go out to you. So anyway, here we are. Let's see, Stephen Robin. We can go. Let me wave. Praying for people. Yes, we all are praying. Any advice on how to help pets avoid smoke inhalation? You know, it's a good question. First of all, you know, I'm sure, I don't know any offhand, I can send you to get a brand, but I'm sure there's some masks. What you can do is, for now, as a temporary measure, is you can take a basket muzzle and you could put a mask, a regular mask, on the outside of the basket muzzle. The question is, which masks? I was talking to an MD friend of mine who was saying the surgical mask that we use, probably that's not going to help. That's not going to stop the particles from coming in. Maybe it will. It's better than nothing. And some people think, I think the N95s are still a better way to go, but we just don't know. Water. The water is a problem. I've been hearing more people talk about the difficulty with our water than anything else, because all these fire retardants and all the stuff that's going into the ground and then going to a water supply. So what we've been doing is we've been boiling our water, then putting it through the Brita filter, and that's how, you know, that became our drinking water. Or of course you can go and buy, you know, any of the purified waters at a market, the big gallon jugs. But again, that's something we're doing. I'm feeding those to my dogs as well and my cats. So and also as far as exercising, try to limit the outdoor time. Try to limit the intense exercise to the point where they're really sucking in the air. And, you know, until we know more, until this, you know, improves, the conditions improve, I think it's better to be safe than sorry. But you could come up with a way to put a mask. You don't want to put a mask right on them, but you can do it in such a way that they are somewhat protected. So a basket muzzle is good because basket muzzles already, they're wider. They leave room for them to breathe and they can pant. So that's probably put it on the outside of the basket muzzle. And that's probably better than nothing. If it's going to really help, I can't tell you. But if anything else, it'll make you feel better. Okay, waving. Hi, Steph. Hope all is well. Got a lot of my friends on here that I feel so terrible. JB, how are you? Stephanie again, another Stephanie. God, what's happening here is miserable. It's they're from Arizona. Okay. All right. So question. Okay. 8-year-old Yale Yorkie diabetic takes insulin 2 times a day. Is it a safe procedure to get his teeth cleaned? He would be given anesthesia, also medication for thyroid and liver. Well, the answer, my short answer is yes. If the teeth are really bad, bad teeth could be more dangerous than any of those. A dog who is on insulin and is on the correct dose and is controlled, then that's not a problem. You give the morning insulin just like you would any other time. As far as the liver, I would imagine the thyroid, again, thyroid disease, they're on, if it's a hypothyroid dog, then it's probably on some sort of thyroid supplement, L-thyroxine, Synthroid, whatever it is. Thyrotabs, they're all okay. They, again, just make sure they get their morning dose. As far as the liver, you know, one of the things that what I would recommend, I would imagine this is an older dog based on all these stories. So what I would do is I would use, I would induce with propofol and I put him on sevoflurane. Isoflurane is probably okay too, but SIVO is like they say for animals that are infirm that have organ dysfunction, that might be the safest of the safe. So that's what I would do. Of course, on IV fluids, monitoring all the things that we do anyway. So that's sort of how I would take that. I do not take other diseases or age to be the things. And who are we saying here? Yes, Kelsey. Hello, Kelsey. So yes, dental cleanings on 19-year-old pets, absolutely, they do great. I remember back in the day, we'd talk about thyroid. Before there was the radioactive I-131, I used to do thyroid surgery on these animals, on these cats and dogs. I remember I had an 18-year-old cat that I removed the thyroid and the cat did fine. So yes, age is not a disease. Some of these things are modern anesthetics and we are so much more comfortable in knowing how to manage them, how to administer, what to watch, et cetera, that I won't not do something that's necessary just because the liver problem or just because hyperthyroid or just because hypothyroid or just because diabetes. It all, you know, we of course, we respect those diseases and conditions and we make adjustments as needed. But well, I'm not going to not do something that's necessary. Now, if it's an elective procedure, a different story. You know, if that was at lipoma or a wart, I don't know. I don't think we'd have to. I would do it. But really bad teeth, that could be a problem and it could be worse. So yes, I would go ahead. And Kelsey, thank you. Hope you're well. Say hi to your dad, by the way. Okay, so JB, you're safe. I know. I mean, many of us that live in the West LA area are sitting on pins and needles. My other sister, so one had to evacuate. The other one is up in the Hollywood Hills and they've been really under a close watch. They haven't had to evacuate yet, no mandatory evacuation, but her whole neighborhood is on literally very close watch. So it is really tough. Dog quality, what do we do about walking? I'm Jillian, I say walking the dogs. I mean, look, yes, we you need to walk the dogs. That's not a problem. So, but try to avoid like excessive exertion. Something that they're going to really have to, where they're getting all tight and they're going to really, and also, you know, when they breathe in directly into their mouths, into their lungs, panting, that's probably something, it would be great if we can avoid it. Now, take to walk, they got to go outside. That's fine. And if you're walking, if you don't have a yard and they don't go in their yard and you got to walk half a block or a block up back and forth and then, you know, call it quits, but no overexertion. But again, it's okay to take that. Michelle, how are you? Okay. All right. Keep those questions coming. So, you know, that is, it's really more of about a prevention than anything else. And again, there's so little we know. And, you know, again, it's a little more difficult for these animals, because you can't, you know, with us, it's easy to put a mask on if you want to do a mask and, you know, wherever the case may be. You know, we could see in our area that we're not, fortunately, where we are, and my son and my daughter, we live very close to each other, 4 blocks away from each other. We're all good. But and one of my daughters lives 15 minutes away. They're out, totally out of the range. But, you know, it's important to kind of respect that air, the water. I get so many comments about the water. So that's important. But it is, you know, it's try to prevent as much as you can. Now, you know, I'm hearing things now. I'm thinking maybe I should go to Costco and buy some, you know, fire hydrant. I mean, you know, the extinguishers and or this coating that they say is the fire retardant. Someone told me about a house in the Palisades, which is like desolated, and they had this fire retardant kind of coating on the house, and there's a house all around it destroyed, and this one house is standing. And another one used building materials that apparently are somewhat resistant to fire, and this house is beautiful, standing right in the middle of all these other houses that are really burnt to the ground. It is so weird when you hear about these cases where you see one house still standing, the fire like skipped over it. How'd that happen? So it is, it's really crazy. I said, I'm so worried about all these poor animals that are out there. And again, they're helpless, and it's, you know, it's terrible. All right. Economia. Hold on. Is it okay to let them run on the beach? Well, you know, look, the air quality at the beach is better. However, you look at Malibu, and sometimes you would say the sand itself should be a great barrier. But, and then you got the ocean. But I'm right on the other side of Pacific Coast Highway, all of a sudden, or there's, you know, there's areas on the Pacific Coast Highway, there are areas of homes. One of my friend's home was on that such area, and it's gone. So there's no rhyme or reason to this. Nobody knows. Now, if you're on the beach near the ocean, you're probably okay. But, you know, these things are floating in the air. I mean, I went out to my car, and there was, you know, all this soot and stuff right on my car. So, and the ash. So I don't know what to tell you. I would say I would still exercise caution until we know more, till things settle down a little bit more. You know, your dog if we exercise as much as you like to exercise your animals, we'd all be in great shape. Let's face it. So we go a lot sometimes with not exercising so much. And so maybe if you ease up a little bit until we know more, that wouldn't be a bad idea. Took cats to the vet who had respiratory virus, gave her prednisone tablets and Enrocat oral and Pulmicort. Turns out she's asthmatic too. 9 years vaccinated indoors. So, well, first of all, you know, if it was just a virus, I'm not a big fan of prednisone, but I will tell you, it wouldn't surprise me that it is asthma, because we see that. And these other things that they're using, well, Pulmicort, that sounds like it's something, cortisone also, prednisone. But I would say that for an asthmatic, I like that. Also, one thing you can add to that, just to maybe lessen the dose of the oral steroids, even though I will say that it seems like cats are much more tolerant to steroids than dogs and then people also. I wouldn't say you can use it with, as I often say, reckless abandon, but you are usually, you're less concerned on a cat with steroid use. Dogs and dog and people are much more sensitive long-term without going alternate day. Cats seem to tolerate the steroids a lot better. But make sure it shouldn't be prednisone for a cat. It should be prednisolone. So double check that. Prednisolone for a cat, the way it's metabolized, it is much more effective. They don't do as well on prednisone for the actual steroidal effect. Now, one thing you can do if you have an asthmatic cat, look into something called AeroCat. And then you can use bronchodilator or an inhaled steroid. And those seem to work really well. AeroCat, it's a little device. It's like an inhaler, you know, just the kind of little inhalers that people use for asthma. But it's a device that you put the inhaler through this little mask that goes over their faces, and they have to breathe. And that's how they get the stuff. So talk to your veterinarian. You can go get it online. And then I prefer the steroid type of inhaler, but they're also a bronchodilator. And sometimes you can use both. In bad cases, you can use both. Cookie Town. All right. Let me see. Hello. I just want to wave to everybody. So glad you're here. My sister's not on yet, so I'm worried that, I mean, they're away, but still. Okay. All right. Another question coming. Here we go. From Hopscotch loves to roll around outside. His fur has been covered with ash. That's right. When he comes in, been trying to be diligent wiping him off, but it's scary. Yes, it is. And by the way, Hopscotch, I shouldn't say I have some favorites. I have a lot of favorites, but Hopscotch is one of them. And I think I'm one of his favorites. So it's very mutual. But yes, you know, again, brushing is good. You know, when they have all that you know, ash, it's probably not a good thing to breathe in. So, you know, again, if you have such an animal, especially one that likes to roll around and it's full of this stuff, then you might want to, you know, brush well, take a damp rag or a cloth and just roll it over it and get a lot of that stuff out so it doesn't start flying all over the place. So he's less inclined to inhale it. Eating it is not such a big deal if he licks himself, but the problem is getting it into the lungs. So if you wet it down, it won't sort of be so fly away and it'll be less likely something that he can inhale. All right. We are at that time for our break. So here on Instagram, don't go away. We'll talk a little bit during the break. Here on Pet Life Radio, we're going to break for a few minutes. A word from our sponsors and take it away, Mark.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Oh, and we're back live here. And I was talking about the VMX, which is a big trade show coming up at the end of January. It's usually the second week of January, which I prefer. Why? Because at the end of January, annually, is the Colorado Veterinary Medical Association SCICE. The SCICE meeting is SCI, C-E. It is the greatest. I happened upon it accidentally about 7 years ago, and it's the best. So it's always great topics, great speaker, you know, sometimes group of speakers, sometimes it's one on a very specific in-depth topic or topics. And, but you know, you're in, you start at 6:30 a.m. for a light continental type breakfast. Then we go 7 to 9 session. It's a single session for everybody. Then we go to 9 to 4 slopes. What can be better? And then, you know, I'm a snowboarder. So much fun. And then you come back at 4 to 7 to 4, and then 4 to 6 more session. And then you're free on your own for dinner. It is such a great, and it's such a relaxed group. Everybody has so much fun, and so many people, you know each other for so long from, you know, returning. Anyway, because they had to delay VMX 2 weeks, they fall exactly the same time. And unfortunately, I have a bigger present for myself at VMX, so I can't go to SCICE this year. And I'm so bummed. It's going to be back at Vail. We've been available. We've been at Breckenridge and Crested Butte and where else? Oh, of course, Vail, Steamboat Springs. I mean, all these great, great venues, ski venues, snowboard venues. Anyway, I'm kind of bummed that I'm going to miss it this year, but I will be back next year. And then also, because of that, the fact that VMX is 2 weeks late, then always a month later, roughly, is in Las Vegas, is Western Vet Conference. So huge, huge conference. That now is also delayed 2 weeks, and that's going to be the first week of March. So, I mean, it's throwing my ski weeks off this year. So I may have to end up going to Mammoth, go someplace locally. Maybe I'll go back to Utah. I got to do something or else I'm going to go nuts. All right. Where are we? All right. Love it. Just got back from teaching in Mammoth. Yes. Enjoy. Is it Mammoth the best? Love it. Love it. Love it. I don't want to miss any waving. I'm trying to wave at everybody. Tricky. Do you know if the risk? Indoor cats drinking from a bird bath. I would not let a cat drink from a bird bath. There are so many things going on now, especially with these birds. that it probably is, it's probably not a good idea if you can avoid it. Cats for sure, because we know that outdoor cats are at risk to some of these viruses, like the H5N1, which is a biggie. And that's the really bad avian influenza virus that is, it can even attack people. And we've seen it a lot in large cats, big cats, in domesticated cats. Unfortunately, my four cats are all indoor only, so I'm really not worried. But as far as outdoor cats, where they're birds, I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but out in my neighborhood, I walk my dogs, a lot in my neighborhood, and I've been seeing these large black crows literally dead. This is about 3-4 months ago. And I'm thinking, first one you see could be a million reasons. Then I'm seeing another one over here on someone's front lawn or one in the middle of the street. I thought that was really weird. And I thought to myself, it's got to be some illness because it was too many. And as I said, it was kind of like Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. Well, I mean, there are thousands in trees. It's crazy. Anyway, I was doing some work. I was on Inside Edition about a week ago talking about the H5N1 influenza virus. And I realized, I'll bet you that's what it was. It was affecting the birds, and that's what it does. So yes, I would be careful, and I would probably, I would not like to, I would say, better safe than sorry. So I would say, try to avoid the outdoor cats drinking from bird baths, because we don't know how much of that and how it's, how it can be spread, but it can be. I think it's in trouble. So, yeah, I would love that. Anytime Hopscotch wants to come and see me, I would love to see him. I think I've got you all. So anything I want to talk about? There's more. Carly, oh, hi, how are you? Okay, oh, a lot of waves. New York Yankee. Patsy, how you doing? Patsy, we've had some issues with some of our classmates and these fires. It's been really, really, it's a bummer. Another classmate of mine. This is really cool when I'm doing these shows and I'm seeing a lot of these names that are my classmates from high school. We're talking about 52 years ago. And still in touch, we went to Beverly Hills High School. And I guess it's in a sense, it's very unique because I have so many people that I'm in touch with from my high school class that I'm so friendly with. Of course, I see their pets. I'm the only veterinarian in my graduating class. So I think that might have, not only am I the only veterinarian, in my era, which is so weird, which let's say from my sister who graduated in 70 to my little brother graduated in 75. In those 5 years, Beverly Hills High School graduated only 4 future veterinarians. One got a year ahead of me, Marty. Marty Schwartz is already retired. Then there was one of my little sister's class who was an equine vet in Colorado. Another one in a class below me, Mark Coxinetta, who was at the Davis with me. And he was actually finished a year ahead of me. Graduated a year behind me in high school. I got into vet school a year before me. Shame on him. So anyway. He's also equine vet, large animal vet. And that was it, 4 of us. So I'm the only veterinarian from that 5-year spread, I'm sure more, practicing in Los Angeles. And that's why I think I see from my both sisters' class, my brother's class, my class, which is kind of fun. In fact, it's so funny because if they come in and they say, oh, I know Jeff from high school, the receptionist saying, yeah, well, you and everybody else. So, but anyway, no, it's great. I love it, love it, love it, love it. So we are a very interesting class, and in that we, many of us still keep in touch with each other. So I wanted to say something about, we got a case also recently about a tumor that somebody, I recommended that we take this tumor off, and the dog had terrible teeth. So this is where the difference between academic approach and a practical approach. I say all the time, I'm a practical guy. I'm not, you got to think out a case. So here's a scenario. A middle-aged dog comes in with a mass on his back. I can feel it. I didn't like it. I said, look, teeth are terrible. I can see 2 teeth absolutely needed to be extracted. Instead of sitting and sticking a needle in this thing, 50% of needle aspirates come back inconclusive. I want to take it off anyway. So let's schedule a dentistry, and we'll take the mass off, and then I'll have it biopsy. That way, we'll know for sure what it is. Okay, and that's my approach. So this was a rescue dog, and of course, with rescues, I'm trying to really conserve the dollars because they don't have a lot of money. So I'm trying to be very, very practical. Well, the dog, in the meantime, a week later gets adopted out. And this guy takes the dog to his vet. I'm not going to mention who the vet is. I know who it is. And I was so dissatisfied with what they did. First, they did a needle aspirate. Well, the needle aspirate came back and it was a tumor. I didn't see the results. I don't know if it was a benign or malignant tumor yet. I think it was benign, but I said, I want to see the results. So then I just wasted $500 to do the aspirate and the lab fee. Okay. That kind of bugged me. And then, because there was a good chance that after the $500, it would have come back inconclusive, 50% chance. Then, so of course, they took it off. They did a surgery, they did the teeth, and they did the mass, and they now biopsied the mass, $3,000. Now, mind you, that's crazy expensive. So what my bottom line is, when you have a case, I looked at it this way. I said, look, I'm going to want to do the teeth in the next week or two anyway. So we'll do it all under one anesthesia at the same time, send them for biopsy. And because it was a rescue, I would have given them the break. I said, they probably would have gotten out the door for $1,500 for everything. So it cost them double, twice the price, plus the first case of the cytology, which was one that if you know you're going to take it off anyway, the only reason to maybe do cytology, if you maybe suspect a mast cell tumor, that way you want to make sure that you know you need to get good margins. But guess what? If you have a dog and you have enough skin, I get margins anyway. Why even risk it? So it was a wasted step. And so, you know, again, if you're going to want to take something off anyway, or you have a better reason to anesthetize a dog anyway, then why do a test that may prove ineffective? It may prove that non-diagnostic. Now, if that test, let's say, for example, it came back, the cytology came back, lipoma. That's curious, throw it at you. And so it was a decent size mass, maybe the size of a large walnut, you know, that was teeny, but it wasn't huge. And let's say it came back, a lipoma, but you knew you're going to do the teeth anyway. Are you going to leave it there because it was a benign? Or as what I would do is say, look, we're anesthetizing the dog anyway. We're going to have to do the teeth anyway and take and extract those two teeth. We may as well get rid of it because over time, lipomas can grow. And then right now, it's an easy fix, but a year from now, it might be three times the size and a lot more difficult to remove. That's where the practical hack comes in. So, you know, if question your doctors, if they don't have a good reason, or if you know you're going to remove the mass anyway, and it's someplace where you can get margins anyway, don't waste them. Don't let them rob you. And that's what's happening. And it really frustrates me. And I see these cases all the time. And I don't know whether it's lack of experience. I don't know whether it's, I would hate to think that it's truly just to, you know, pad their bottom line. Again, I'd hate to think that. I'm not saying it, but I hate to think it. So anyway, it's okay. It's okay to question. It's okay to challenge. And it's okay to get a second opinion. Don't worry about it. Get a second opinion. That's okay too. So anyway, I'm going to leave that thought with you because you could tell these things frustrate me a little bit. And unfortunately, I hear these stories too often. And it worries me that this is where the profession is going. And that's why I want you to be more vigilant. And you can challenge and you can ask questions. And as I said, if need be, get a second opinion. So anyway, or talk to the doctor. So wait a second, if we're going to take this off anyway, why stab it and worry about maybe not getting a real answer, a good answer? Well, because I want to know if it is what the margins will be. I'll tell you what, you know, here, doc, it's in the middle of, you know, it's plenty of skin. Just, you know, take it a little wider than you thought, and you'd be safe either way. That's how I look at it. So I don't know. call me the weirdo. That's okay too. But it's been working well for me for 40 years, and I think I'm going to continue doing it. So anyway, it reminds me of a cute story. A lot of times these old breeders, and I get a vaccine schedule, and they are starting their puppy shots at 6 weeks, and that drives me nuts because what you don't understand, starting puppy vaccines too early could actually interfere with mom's passive immunity. It'll use up the antibodies that mom passed on to the puppy. So you don't want to do it. 8 weeks is when you need to start. Oh, where I start at seven. If I had no pre-history, maybe we don't know if it was, if it was a rescue. We don't know if it was a nurse. We don't know anything. Okay, maybe 7 weeks, but not six. Anyway, so I've called breeders before. Now, this is what we've learned is new, relatively new. I mean, relatively, it's still 20 or 30 years, but in someone's eyes, that could be new. So I sometimes call these breeders very nicely. And I say, oh my God, hi, I'm Dr. Werber. I just saw one of your pups. Oh, what a beautiful pup. Very sweet. One thing I noticed that, I see you were given the vaccine, started the series at 6 weeks. Did she have any problem nursing? No, she was nursing just fine. Okay, well, one thing to be learned that it's very important that we don't want to start vaccine series too early because mom's passive immunity is good till at least 8 weeks, maybe even up to 10. So we like to start around 8 weeks, then go 8, 12, 16. We don't need to do them every 2 weeks anymore. It's 8, 12, 16, the perfect schedule. These dogs do just fine. And I'll get a comment. Look, Sonny, I've been doing this for 40 years. I think I know what I'm doing. That's the problem. You've been doing it for 40 years and you haven't kept up. And it's amazing to me how many breeders, legitimate breeders, I use that term loosely, legitimate breeders think that by becoming a breeder, they automatically get their DVM, their doctor of veterinary medicine at the same time. And they don't want to learn new things. So when I hear one of my mentors, and this resonates with me all the time, her final words to me when we talk, she goes, Jeff, there's no doubt you know your stuff. But just remember, every 5 years, half of what was gospel is now obsolete. And that hit me. And I said, so that's why it is so important. I even pick up my old notes. I still have my old textbooks from 45 years ago. And I laugh. See them. I said, we used to do that. So things change. Things change very quickly. Things that were the standard are not even standard anymore. They're not even belts anymore. So when these breeders are grasping on to stuff they did 30, 40 years ago, it is concerning to me. So anyway, with that thought, adopt. Don't even go to these breeders. I just had a client that has a problem with their Frenchie and they love Frenchies. They know they're going to be getting another Frenchie. They already have three now. And I said, look, this is going to be a problem with this dog. I don't want to go into it. But I said, you're going to get another Frenchie. Oh, 100% we're going to have it. I said, you know what? Maybe this time, go to Frenchie, one of the Frenchie adoptions, because there are so many breed-specific rescues these Frenchie Club, this Golden Retriever Club, you can go there and get an amazing, healthy, great dog. So maybe think about that. Adopt, don't shop. We'll see you next week here on Pet Life Radio and Ask the Vet to Dr. Jeff. And during the week, let me wave some more of you. So I'm so happy that you all come. If there's a hi, Keith. Before I go, I want to make sure there are no other questions. Good. I think we got you. Oh, do cytology analysis always send them out? Oh, that's a great question too. When it comes to something like if I know pretty sure it's a lipoma, I'll do it myself. But for many pieces, and Kelsey, we're here in LA, very litigious. If it's going to be a potential discussion as to whether or not to remove it, then I'm going to send it. I want that professional. Now, there is another alternative now using AI, and it's Imagist. If I'm sort of borderline, if I think I'm going to want to remove it anyway, I might use an Imagist. That's the AI. But if I'm going to do Imagist, you do Imagist dermatology, not Imagist cytology. Now, Imagist cytology, it is reviewed by a board certified professional. So you say you get a pathologist, a cytopathologist that's going to read the slide just to back up what the AI says. I'll do that. That's fine. I'm very comfortable with that. But if there's a doubt as to whether something, how aggressive something may be, I'm not so sure. I feel more comfortable. I mean, again, I can read the basics. I can read the basic slides. I do it all the time. But if it's going to be, I say it this way. If I do it myself and I'm right, well, I'm right. But what happens if I read it myself and I was wrong? And I told these people, you know what? Doesn't look aggressive to me. Leave it alone. Then it could be disastrous. So I like the backup. Same reason why I do in-house testing. And if I have a dog that's in today and needs to be anesthetized today, I will use my in-house machine. It's a great machine. Everything about it is good. But you know what? If I have an extra day or two, I'm going to take a blood test, send it out to the lab. I want that professional animal laboratory result to kind of CYA, to cover your, you know what? And I don't want to have to question. I don't want to wonder, did I write? Is this machine right? I'm not sure. I want it. So if there's a problem and it was misread, it's not my problem. I go to the professional animal laboratory. That's their problem. So that's my philosophy. It always has been. But I don't know. I don't know how comfortable you are doing cytology. I mean, really, to make the difference between something that might be a cancer or not. So that's kind of how I feel about it. So I hope that answers your question. All right. Anything else? If there is, I just want to get some more. I think I got everybody. Perfect. Well, anyway, thanks for joining me. Please stay safe out there. If you're here in SoCal, if you're here now, I mean, the area is just enlarged as we speak. So, you know, it's not, now it's going into the Brentwood area, anything north of Sunset, I think Mandeville Canyon. So that area now is not safe. Up in the Hollywood Hills, anything coming around Pasadena, all that Altadena area, that's not safe. I mean, here where we are south of all that and far east of all that, right now we're okay, but man, we're all on the watch. So stay safe. And if you have extra rooms in your homes and you have people out there that are in trouble, maybe offer a room. So anyway, see you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel here on Instagram Live on Pet Life Radio. And I said during the week, if you need to get a hold of me, you know how to get a hold of me. Many easy ways, Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com. Here on Instagram, just send me a chat and I'll be happy to answer your questions. All right, be well, have a great week, and stay safe.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.